ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
This morning we're reading text 24, Canto 7, Chapter 3.
Sanarikshambare Devam Hamsavaham Upastitam Nanama Shirasa Bhomau Tad Darshana Mahotsavaha Narikshara Niriksha Nirikshambare Devam Hamsavaham Upastitam Nanama Shirasa Bhomau Tad Darshana Mahotsavaha. Saha Hi Hiranyakashipu Niriksha, seeing, Ambare, in the sky, Devam, the supreme demigod, Hamsa Vaham, who rides a swan airplane, Upastitam, situated before him, Na-nama, offering obeisances. Shirasa, with his head. Bhomau, on the ground. Tad-darshana, by seeing Lord Brahma. Maha-utsava, very much pleased. Translation, seeing Lord Brahma present before him in the sky carried by his swan airplane, Hiranyakashipu was extremely pleased. He immediately fell flat with his head on the ground and began to express his obligation to the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. 2.5-page purport. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verses 23 through 24. Ye pyanya devata bhakta jajante shradayanvitaha te pimam eva kanteya yajantya vidhi purvakam aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhur eva cha naturmam abhijananti tatvena tascha cha vantite. Translation. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding. I am the only enjoyer and the only object of sacrifice. Those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. In effect, Krishna says, quote, persons engaged in the worship of demigods are not very intelligent, although such worship is indirectly offered to me, unquote. For example, when a man pours water on the leaves and branches of a tree without pouring water on the root, he does so without sufficient knowledge, or without observing regulative principles. The process of watering a tree is to pour water on the root. Similarly, the process of rendering service to different parts of the body is to supply food to the stomach. The demigods are, so to speak, different officers and directors in the government of the Supreme Lord. One has to follow the laws made by the government, not by the officers or directors. Similarly, everyone has to offer his worship to the Supreme Lord only that will automatically satisfy the different officers and directors of the Lord. the officers and directors are engaged as representatives of the government, and to offer some bribe. Some parts of the world, that's very prevalent. In fact, you can't get anything done unless you do it. I know of at least one place that's like that. To offer some bribe. Yeah. To offer some bribe to the officers and directors is illegal. That is stated in Bhagavad Gita as avidhi purvakam. In other words, Krishna does not approve the unnecessary worship of the demigods. Interesting, because such a large percentage of the Vedas is about worshiping the demigods. Krishna doesn't approve. Paragraph. In Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that there are many types of yajna performances recommended in the Vedic literatures, but actually all of them are meant for satisfying the Supreme Lord. Yajna means Vishnu. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that one should work only for satisfying yajna or Vishnu. The perfectional form of human civilization, known as Varnashram Dharma, is specifically meant for satisfying Vishnu. Therefore, Krishna says, quote, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices because I am the Supreme Master, unquote. However, less intelligent persons, without knowing this fact, worship demigods for temporary benefit. Therefore, they fall down to material existence and do not achieve the desired goal of life. If, however, anyone has any material desire to be fulfilled, he had better pray for it to the Supreme Lord, parentheses, although that is not pure devotion, and he will thus achieve the desired result. Two more paragraphs. Although Hiranyakashipu offered his obeisances unto Lord Brahma, he was strongly inimical toward Lord Vishnu. This is the symptom of an asura. Asuras worship the demigods as being separate from the Lord, not knowing that all the demigods are powerful because of being servants of the Lord. If the Supreme Lord were to withdraw the powers of the demigods would no longer be able to offer benedictions to their worshippers. The difference between a devotee and a non-devotee, or asura, is that a devotee knows that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that everyone derives power from him. Without worshiping the demigods for particular powers, a devotee worships Lord Vishnu, knowing that if he desires a particular power, he can get that power while acting as Lord Vishnu's devotee. Therefore, in the Shastras, Bhagavatam 2.3.10, it is recommended. Famous verse. Akama sarvakamo va moksha kamo udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushamparam. Translation. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Even if a person has material desires, instead of worshiping the demigods, he should pray to the Supreme Lord so that his connection with the Supreme Lord will be established and he will be saved from becoming a demon or non-devotee. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya gives the following quotation from the Brahmatarka. This is the last passage in the purport. Ekastainaika kartavya karyatvad Vishno pradhyatastata jivasya tad adhinatvan nabinadi kritam vachaha. Since Vishnu is the supreme, by worshipping Vishnu, one can fulfill all one's desires. There is no need to divert one's attention to any demigod. Well, Prabhupada really jumped on this verse with a nice long purport, all emphasizing in kind of repeated way the theme. That is one of the distinctions between the suras and the asuras. Here he's saying it's the difference. Is the suras or the devotees understand the cause of all causes, the source of everything. And they, according to scripture, they worship the supreme, the source of everything. And the non-devotee or the asura doesn't recognize that there's a source, and therefore they go to different other places to see that their necessities or their desires or their hankerings are fulfilled. Interesting, because they're worshiping, but and they're even worshiping in some cases, these cases, they're worshiping in accordance with injunctions from the Vedas. Now, what Hiranyakashipu did wasn't like a normal Vedic sacrifice. He did something pretty extreme. But the principle of propitiating the devas is the principle message and activity prescribed within the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, the vast section of the Vedas, that section of the Vedas which, interestingly, are on the one hand considered, that's what the Vedas are. And just a little sharing from the Tattva Sandarbha. Interesting that that's upheld, Rig Sama Yajur and Atharva Veda. That's Vedic, that's the Shruti portion of the Vedas. They don't even really guard the other, some, many persons don't regard the others as valid Vedas, except for the Upanishads. And those who are scholars of the Upanishads and Shankaracharya, and, you know, this is something that Vaishnavas and the monists agree with. Yeah, they agree with something. That the, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, Trigunya Vishaya Veda, Nishtrigunya Bhavarjana. It's like, Nishtrigunya Bhavarjana. He's dismissing the Trigunya Vishaya. The Vishaya means enjoyment. Enjoyment within the three modes of material nature. Even if it's Vedic, Nishtrigunya Bhavarjana. So there goes that vast portion of the Vedas. Krishna. And Shankaracharya agree. So, of course, then there's a difference. Shankaracharya says the Upanishads, and the Upanishads teach Brahman. So, therefore, those portions of the Vedas which deal with Bhagavan and Bhakti, that's not okay because it's not, doesn't fit within the parameters of monism. But if you're weak-minded and sentimental, you want to do bhakti, okay. But the goal of that, you know, pancha upasana, those five kinds of worship, the goal is to get to Brahman. Then you can throw away your deity and throw away your guru, and because then you're Brahman. You're Narayan. That's the target. That's the objective. Here, Prabhupada is not addressing the impersonalists. He's addressing the followers of that 90% plus portion of the Vedas, where it speaks of sacrifice, you know, Vedic sacrifice conducted by a Brahmana for the purpose of worship of the demigods. And the purpose behind worshiping the demigods is very clear. There's different desires to be fulfilled, material desires to be fulfilled. Just before this second canto, chapter 3, verse, akama sarva kama va, just before that there's two verses, long verses, where it describes, if you have this desire, worship this deva. If you have that desire, worship that deva. If you have some other desire, worship that deva or devi. So it's like a pantheon of desires to be fulfilled by different devas. That's this Karmakanda section of the Vedas. Then comes this, actually, person who's wise, Udhara Di. Udhara means broad. And di means intelligence, like buddhi, di, that syllable means intelligence. Those who are with broad intelligence, they worship Vishnu, because he is the source of the devas and the powers of the devas. And he can withdraw power from the devas. He can withdraw the devas. It's his arrangement. He is the source. This is a fundamental teaching of the Bhagavatam. It's a fundamental teaching of Bhagavad Gita. It's a fundamental teaching of Brahma Samhita, because they're all teaching the same. Just a little sharing on the Brahma Samhita side, same point. And in the invocation verse, or the first verse, the Paribhasha Sutra of Brahma Samhita, just the first line, Ishvara Parama Krishna. So to expand that message, amongst Ishwaras, one is Parama. And that one is Krishna. Ishvara Parama Krishna. So there's 11 verses come later in the prayers by Lord Brahma where he lists, many of the devas, not all. It's 11 verse doesn't cover all. There's 33 million. But various devas and their service and, you know, their the potency that they have and the fact that they derive their potency from Govinda. We mentioned this the other morning. So, the asaras, just to repeat the message of the purport, they don't recognize Govinda. They don't recognize Vishnu. They don't recognize the absolute truth. That's the nature of an asura. So certainly there's unregulated asuras. They're just like, they have no discipline of approaching someone. They're just wild. However, you know, more traditional asuras, like Hiranyakashipu, he's worshipping Brahma. Again, to repeat messages from earlier, it's a little puzzling. He's worshipping Vishnu, he's worshipping Brahma to bump him off. He'd like that post very much. And Here he is, in this verse, he's lying flat before him, the very same person he wants to bump off. A little disconcerting, isn't it? I mean, but hey, the Suras can do those things, no problem. No problem. Now, they can do other things besides fall flat before Lord Brahma. Get out their weapons and see if they can do them in. Have some combat. That's what the Asuras often do. They challenge the demigods and have battle. And sometimes they win, sometimes they lose. Usually they lose because Vishnu supports them. But if they've made some big boo-boo, then they lose. Because their power, for example, the power of the demigods were lost when Indra offended Brihaspati and Brihaspati left. And over on the Daitya side, Sukracharya understood. Fantastic. Their strength comes from their spiritual master. They've offended their spiritual master. He's gone. They've lost their strength. Go team, go. Get those devas. Because they're weak now. Because they lost their strength. So now, here's Hiranyakashipu wishing strength from Lord Brahma. And obviously, as Lord Brahma stated and the demigods previously stated, he's already powerful from his austerities. Austerities make someone powerful. Yes? I mean, even in worldly things, austerities make one powerful. There's shakti, there's power, potency within austerity itself. Now, how does one want to use that strength? Well, Duskritis want to use it for something detrimental or destructive. And Sukriti persons want to use it for the benefit of others. That's, again, divine and demoniac nature, Sukriti, Duskriti. Just to repeat, the focus that Prabhupada places in the purport is the mentality that drives the asura, starting with the Supreme Lord Vishnu is just not in the picture, in fact specifically stated, really ardent animosity towards Vishnu. That same person is falling flat before Lord Brahma, who drives his power from Lord Vishnu. But Hiranyakashipu doesn't recognize that. It just wants, he wants a benediction from Brahma. And he gets, you know, something, benediction from Brahma, and that makes him feel invincible. Similarly, Ravana got his benediction, and he thought he was invincible. He was convinced. And thus, you know, bold actions with no accountability, no recourse, no problem. A nice little example that Prabhupada would sometimes give, which is if you have a long mathematical calculation and you make an error at the beginning of the mathematical calculation, all of the subsequent calculations will be wrong. And you can't just go and adjust something, you know, towards the end. You have to go way back to where the calculation was made wrong. And then you have to adjust everything accordingly. So that's the function or the distinction, a sort of distinction. And then from that, they may worship. They worship according to the modes of nature, and they want something, so this deva and that devi, and they're, off they go. But it's, they're quoting from Bhagavad Gita, avidipurvakam, it's done, they're unintelligent. It's actually meant for Krishna, and instead of offering to Krishna, worshipping Krishna, they worship the agent or representative of Krishna. They may get something, and they want something that's limited and temporary. But it's limited and temporary, and that's foolish. And then this in-between position. Well, so instead of simply desiring something that's eternal, even if someone wants something limited and temporary, they should worship Vishnu. Because he's the source of whatever the demigods can deliver. And by contacting Vishnu, one will become purified. What, of course, if one doesn't want purification, just one wants what one wants. You know, something limited and temporary. The demigods very quickly deliver such things. And when that happens, their faith is nourished. Doesn't Krishna say that in Bhagavad Gita? That it's he who invests them with faith to worship particular demigods. And that, again, faith is nourished because they worship, they get. They worship, they get. They worship, they get. This is good. I'm going to tell my friends, you should worship this, you get. Of course, sometimes one gets what one doesn't want, too, and then they blame the demigod. Oh, you didn't protect me. You didn't give me what I got other than what I wanted. I wanted sukha and I got dukkha. There's a section in Ramayana when Ram is fighting with Ravan and Parvati says, your devotee is in trouble. Why aren't you going to help him? Because he's opposed to my Lord. I don't want to help him. I cannot help him. And I don't want to help him. That's significant because we are dependent, in fact. And so, best to worship the Supreme Lord. And if one worships others and derives power from others, then one may very well become inimical to he who is the source of all power. That's part of the Asura mentality. And then those places from which one derives some power, they're not going to deliver the energy or the potency or the necessity for well-being. There's a nice pastime or exception to that which I just said. When Banasura is fighting and Lord Shiva comes to his aid, so Krishna then is engaged in some battle with Lord Shiva, and guess who is victorious? And when Krishna is ready to eat, chopping off all the arms of Banasura, Lord Shiva appeals on behalf of his devotee. Although Lord Shiva very well understands his pride, because it happens earlier in the Leela, even though he understands his pride, he still appeals on Banasura's behalf. And Krishna gives some benediction to Banasura. May you worship your master and live long life. Krishna is very kind. So, in short, that's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Worship Krishna. Worship Krishna. Be a devotee. Worship Krishna. And the other options, They're not advisable for multiple reasons. Okay, so any discussion? Up front here?
All right, Krishna, thank you for the class in our rush. My question is, in this verse, it clearly mentions that Krishna is the center of the universe, or all sacrifices should go to him.
Krishna is the center of the universe?
Yeah.
for?
All sacrifices. He's the beneficiary of everything.
Yeah, that's right.
So when sometimes, at least in my own experience, I'm sure other people experience, is that when newcomers come, even for ourselves, is that a lot of times we hear the phrase, I don't answer to man, I answer to God.
Many times we have what?
We hear the phrase, people, when they hear a certain spiritual philosophy, they may say, I don't answer to man, I only answer to God. And so in this instance...
I haven't heard that one.
Really?
Have you heard
Has anyone heard that one? I don't answer.
It's trendy these days?
Yeah.
Okay. And I've got a pipeline to God. If you want to know what God says, ask me. I'll tell you. I don't listen to you. Okay, I got it.
So when we read this philosophy, it's kind of nice for people who think that way, because you see that Krishna's the center of the universe. But then later on, we read in the philosophies that Krishna says, greater than the worship of Vishnu is the worship of Vaishnavas. And so then people may think, whoa, I have a problem with that. So how do we kind of go about that?
Separating out Krishna and Vishnu?
No, not in that sense. Sometimes you're not able to maybe give people the certain aspects of the philosophy that they may not be ready to digest. And so is it just important?
Go slowly. Go principle-based. Again, just my some appreciation from... I'm becoming a real Jiva Goswami fan. You have to excuse me. In his construction of the Sandarbhas, he doesn't get into, the speciality of Krishna until much later. First, he establishes principles, that are whoever is out there, the external audience folks, they may not have what Gaudiyas have, appreciation of Krishna and rasa and, Madhurya rasa and so forth, the exalted nature of Vrindavan. They may not have that, so that's okay. Starting with principles, the right after Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost valid source of knowledge, right away gets into Bhagavan, which Vaishnavas, whatever their tradition is, can relate to. And why? Because Bhagavan includes everything. What's the speciality of Bhagavan? And then it's Paramatma Sandarbha, not the other way around. So, in response to your question, when we're addressing the public or an audience that may not, whether, they Christian or Muslim or Hindu or, this sampradaya, that sampradaya, the specialities, the uniquenesses of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, that's not where we begin. We begin in terms of principle. Right away. God is a person. Bhagavan is, so Sri Bhagavanavachi, what's Bhagavan? What's the message of the Vedas? What's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, starting with Bhagavatam is Bhagavan, and Bhagavan is a person who has unlimited, inconceivable potencies. And then when we can understand that, God is a person with unlimited, inconceivable potencies, it's the foundation for moving into affairs of creation, where there's time and matter and living entities and the interaction of all of them with the Supreme Person, and that's the Purusha avatar feature, the Paramatma feature, the Vishnu feature. But starting with, and so, in response to your question again, is that the special appreciation and distinctions of Gaudiya Vaishnavism is not where we begin with others, the external audience. It's, these fundamental principles. So, anything else? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Well, it's not a very practical question, but we always hear that asuras, they are trying to overtake the, you know, heavenly planets to fight demigods. So my question is, how do they get access to that heavenly planets?
They have their vimanas too. They have their way of transport. So they have powers. They can go from, you know, Zoom. Just like, you're familiar with Ramayana? You know, Ramachandra fighting against Ravana, right? Ravana kidnapped Sita, took her away to Lanka, and looking, where is Sita? Hanuman went soaring across 800 miles as a big jump. He won the Olympic medal and reached Lanka. So that was like a special feat, accomplishment. But when Ravana's brother wanted to join Ram, Vibhishan wanted to join Ram, he did the same thing. It wasn't like a big deal. He just, and his four ministers came with him, Zoom. So they have powers, mystic powers, to transport themselves in ways that the rest of us folks don't have. They have mystic powers. They're powerful, again, from things that they do, austerities and practices, and then, you know, one teaches the other and they learn how to do amazing things. They can travel.
Where do they come from then?
Where would they come from?
Where do they come from, yes.
Well, it depends on where they reside. Like, Ravan resided in Lanka. I'm not sure where all they reside, different places where they reside. You have an answer to that one? Where do asuras reside? From where do they come when they go to a... Asa. Well, not all, some, many. You hear about that place before? Bila means a hole. And Svarga, just like heaven, is Svargaloka. So it's a subterranean heavenly planet. It has opulence like heaven. But it's the place where the demons reside. So they go, wow, we made it. But we want that other place too. So that's one of the hangout places of asuras. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is very simple. Some elaboration. My question is, what do we mean by worship? Which is a very simple question. What do we mean? How would we define worship?
How do we define worship?
And this is just a background to why I'm asking this question. What I'm understanding from the purport is that the tendency of the demon or the demoniac mentality is to separate Shakti from the possessor of Shakti.
Yes.
And worship that Shakti independently or as greater than the possessor of the Shakti. And so in the material world, this is a manifestation of Krishna Shakti, so that mentality is very prominent because we don't know about God or we're envious of him for whatever reasons, and we're worshiping Shakti in this material world primarily and in the various manifestations. And as devotees, we also find ourselves very much implicated in sort of a Shakti worship and our total absorption in the objects produced by Maya Shakti. And then the way I'm thinking of worship is like Ekana Manasa, like all energy on one point. So that worship is meant for Krishna, but oftentimes we see our energy placed at Shakti.
Well, you made a big statement. The preamble was clear, and then you made a bold statement, which I'm not sure I understand, not sure I agree with it if I've understood you. You said, and devotees also worship Shakti. And, you know, in the sense that, what? In the sense that we want to be able to sing nicely or build a temple or...
No, it means in our practical life. Because in our practical life, I was meaning, for example, generally when we think of worship, we think of a temple and the, like a mood of reverence toward the deity, towards the devotees, and et cetera, and that's worship. But I'm asking for a definition of worship because it seems that worship is more inclusive.
Oh, yeah.
And so then on a practical level, it may be seen even in our lives as devotees that we worship, like I'm putting in quotation marks, worship Shakti, and that all of our energies...
How so? How so?
And that all
give
of
an
our
example.
Yeah, I'm just giving some crude examples.
Fine. Crude example is good.
Smartphones. Where you'll find that devotees are so absorbed in, just say, the gadgets of the world produced by men, that our worship of the Lord becomes, relegated to just, let's say, a ritualistic morning program that we do, and the rest of the time is just engaged in material energy and so on.
Okay.
And therefore, it's the type of worship as such, of Shakti, and that our practical energy is totally dedicated in that way.
Okay. Well, the alternative is Pogo Vairagya. No smartphones. No computers. No heat in the winter. Yeah, and keep your windows closed in the summer. So we don't want anything to do with what might appear to be, taking advantage of Shakti. So that, be a renunciate. In that sense, the rejection of anything that has to do with this world. Eat dry leaves or something. So then there's the Lord Chaitanya's teaching, which is that the essence of Vairagya is not give things up, the essence of Vairagya is utilize things. The risk, obviously, you're stating, which is we could be engaged in the material energy instead of engaging the material energy. We can get sucked in and get punched by valuing and becoming, in fact, dependent upon our happiness, our functioning can become reduced to dependent upon for everything, for our food, for our existence, where we're dependent upon and our happiness and everything and everything. It's a risk. Big. I'm just thinking in practical terms, my service is very much dependent upon internet. If I go somewhere, one of the first things is, can you help me with the internet connection? First thing. Because my service is so much involved in that technology. So it's not exactly worshiping the technology, it's utilizing the technology. But utilizing the technology to the point where my service is dependent upon the technology, and then therefore my happiness, which is service, is dependent upon technology, and if the technology isn't there, I'm an unhappy Prabhu. Unhappy Swami. I lost control of my senses because the internet went down. So yeah, it's easy to get sucker punched. Easy. And become dependent upon, not exactly worship, as you're saying, worship in quotes, but so the risk is there. Therefore, on multiple occasions, directly I heard Prabhupada explain, we can utilize things and be without those things and find happiness in either case. In either case, because utilizing things can help to spread Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada certainly was able to do what had not previously been done, that is, take a a spiritual teaching and take it all over the world by technology. Planes and microphones and recordings and published literature and so on and so on. Using technology to fulfill, as the asuras are doing to fulfill their purposes. Very effectively. Very nicely. So, now, back to your question. Is there some sense of our getting drawn into valuing and becoming mesmerized by objects of this world when the initial spirit was to utilize things to assist us in service to Krishna? We just, you know, become, something happens. It certainly can happen like that. And it's a big risk. And not only is it a big risk, it happens. I'm thinking at the moment of many devotees. Those that have been around for a while know what I'm speaking about. Devotees that are very nice devotees doing some service, pujari service in India. We invite them to come to America and assist with their pujari service, and something happens. They get spoiled. Somehow, something happens, and it's almost, there's exceptions, but it's almost universal. Something happens. So, look at those objects, woo. And you know, their bhakti is gone, and they're off chasing the objects. That's more worship. You know, the other is also worship. I've noticed on more than one occasion while here, in the temple room, someone's got their right hand in their bead bag, and the left hand on their little device, and you know the light is shining in their face, so that's how I know it's on. And they got their finger, pointing finger from their bead bag, moving things. And it's distraction. It's not exactly worship, but it's certainly distraction. So we can get sucker punched by using things in Krishna service. We have to have, you know, have utilizing things purpose driven and have bhakti strong. And so most important is our core devotional practices and being chastened by the risk of utilizing things as we're utilizing things. Be what's Prabhupada's phrase? Be sufficiently wary about maya. Cautious. Even one may be, you know, an uttama adhikari, which we aren't, still being sufficiently cautious about maya when moving about utilizing things in service to Krishna. Yes. Nice question.
Well, I just wanted to add a small point. I was just thinking it's mostly a matter about sense control when it has to do with using anything. So if we could regulate our use of using technology just as we regulate our eating habits, that's really the key factor. But if we just view it as like, oh, you know, I can use this in Krishna service, no big deal. Like it's just something I'm using for service. And we don't even think about how it can be used for other things.
Good point.
So we kind of, you know, we regulate certain things that are obvious, like, you know, the sexual energy, the food that we eat, but we kind of blow off the less obvious things that can very well increase these other desires in us.
Good point. So it's not only the purpose for which you're using something, but you know, a lot, some time span for using those somethings, and then there's time span for other things that if you don't allot time for, they're not going to happen, like studying. I have so much service, Prabhu. Like that, right? Okay. Wait a minute, let me see if there's others. Anyone else? Okay, you're on. Here comes the microphone.
This related, I guess, to the whole one of your last saying, we should be cautious about maya. And this actually brings to mind in the Bhagavatam, and the only reason I remember is because it's by the pictures where Prabhupada talks about Vaishnava pride. He says of all sin, aparad.
Aparad, okay.
So he says of all sin.
He's another one that speaks fast.
Sorry. That's how I did book distribution before.
I'm sitting here like I'm trying to catch him.
I think I'll do my Himanshu, so I kind of go faster than him. So in our devotional lives, there's a lot of do's and don'ts. I kind of brought this question up the other day. Like, we're taught to avoid Vaishnava Parad, naturally. But there's also, so that's like a don't commit Vaishnava Parad. Yeah. But there's also a do, like, appreciate Vaishnavas. And my question, like, a few weeks ago maybe was that, how important is it to not only, of course, avoid Vaishnava
Parad? How important is it to do what?
Not only avoid committing offenses against devotees, but how imperative it is to our, spiritual life in regards to, let's say, controlling our senses, to also appreciate Vaishnavas. Because, you know, I'm sure we've all...
That's the antidote. That's the antidote. Antidote?
Yeah.
It's the medicine. Just, you do that, take care of that. Really simple. It's important. Yeah, it's important. Then, you know, then we're being, in appreciating other devotees, we're putting them at risk. What's that? They may think, oh, now I'm being appreciated. Now they're being the enjoyer of the appreciation they're receiving. So you're their enemy by appreciating them. There's some statements like that. One who does like that. One who flatters me is my enemy. But, you know, the devotee isn't a flatterer. That's genuine appreciation. And then the one that they're genuinely appreciating has to not, like, be the enjoyer of that appreciation. Because we have to grow in Krishna consciousness. So make it easier. Just keep expressing your criticism of others, and they don't have to worry about being appreciated. Or just become, you know, Mona Vrata and don't say anything. And be impersonalist and remain neutral. So we should be appreciating other devotees, and in the association of devotees, help one another to understand ultimately it's Krishna who is being appreciated, and you're just a recipient of some mercy of Krishna. How nice that is. So Vaishnavas do like that. Okay, I'm going to end. Oops. One last.
Maharaja purports dealing a lot with demigod worship, and it's very interesting in today's society. We did one program at a yoga studio where the worship of demigods for Westerners is actually becoming popular.
Hey, I knew what would happen.
They're worshiping Ganesh, Devi, and it's a very big market, of course. So it seems that it's one of the most difficult avenues to really inject Krishna consciousness, because there's so many, strong misconceptions or attachments to either the demigods or Mayavadi gurus.
Hey, it's an old song with a new tune.
Yeah. So how can we, what's our strategy in this day and age?
Krishna! That's our strategy. We don't have to go in with our club and say, you know, bash this one, bash that one. We just, Krishna. And, you know, be happy. Chant and be happy. And, you know, when people want to hear, we can help them. And if they don't want to hear, we can just, Krishna, you know. Anyway. The real story is in Bhagavad Gita, and we teach and we live by the principles of Bhagavad Gita. That's our strategy. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki.